We've been studying a lot about how to read the Bible. And as we've looked at reading the Bible, one of the things that we've encountered are an incredible number of similes where Jesus says, in the kingdom of God, it will be like this. In fact, when the writers describe Jesus preaching, they simply say that he came preaching the kingdom of God. So it behooves us then to think about the kingdom and what it's going to be like in the kingdom. Now, my approach to trying to do that is to begin thinking this week about the way that we'll organize our study. And of course, as always, we begin with what God did, and then we think about how that impacts our lives. This week, we'll talk about a bit of an introduction and sort of setting the stage for the things that we'll be thinking about over the next few weeks. When I think about God's mission as it pertains to the kingdom, there are four or five things that just cry out to be understood. God sent Jesus here to establish his reign as king, a reign that exists now, that we're a part of, and that will continue throughout all time once judgment has taken place. But God sending Jesus here to establish his kingdom, his reign as king, was a very special kind of establishment because what Jesus did was he established his reign not in the way that most kings establish their reign. If you read through the Old Testament, you see kings who were killing their brothers, who sometimes even killed their mothers because they were afraid that someone was going to challenge them. Sometimes we see people establishing their reign kind of like David did, a great warrior king who put down all of those enemies of Israel so that he could reign in Jerusalem. Jesus is not like that. Jesus is a servant king. And we're going to talk a lot about what that means to say that Jesus establishes his reign as a part of God's mission for him on the earth as a servant king. The second thing that we'll talk about is how God established the limits of his kingdom and established what the benefits would be for those people that were citizens of his kingdom. And that's important to understand. The third thing that we'll kind of touch on is God's effort to create a kingdom that, even though it had limitations, even though there were benefits that were extended to citizens in the kingdom that weren't for everyone, God established a kingdom that all men could be a part of if they chose to be a part of that kingdom. God is not a respecter of persons. God doesn't say, you're my favorite. He doesn't say, I don't care for you. You can't be a part of the kingdom. God establishes a kingdom for all men. And has done it without respect of persons. We learned that from Acts, the 10th chapter, when Peter preached at the household of Cornelius. That's the way he began. I perceive that God is not a respecter of persons. And God established a kingdom that did not confer advantage on any group or on any individual. God never established a system in his kingdom that meant that anyone was above anyone else. So God establishes this marvelous kingdom. That's his mission in sending Jesus to the earth. And we'll talk more about those specifics as we get into this study further. Now, what does that mean about my focus? When I think about the kingdom, how do I think about it? Well, I need to recognize Jesus' reign as the king, God's reign as the king, I guess I should say, because God and Jesus are co-regents. So I recognize his reign. And there, as I think about recognizing the reign of the king, it strikes me that there are three different ways that I relate to the king. The king is going to make certain demands. He expects certain things of me, and I get to respond to those demands in different kinds of ways. Some of those demands are demands that I really don't understand why God said that this is going to be the way that it's going to be. I have no idea what God was thinking when he set up these demands that he makes of me. And it's not mine to speculate as to the purpose. Now, sometimes I tend to speculate as to the purpose because God never told me what the purpose was, and I think I need to make something up. But what God expects when I don't understand the purpose is just simple obedience. I really have to acknowledge that God's ways are not my ways. The way that God thinks is not the way that I think. And I need to just obey. I think of that in some ways as being like the way that parents have to relate to their children. Sometimes we make demands of our children and they don't understand the basis for the demands. We understand it. And we know that it's for their good, but they don't understand that. We have to expect simple obedience. Then there are demands that God makes that I just simply disagree with. It does not seem to me that that's the way that it ought to be. And again, I still have to obey those demands. I'm not the king. I don't get to obey the demands when I agree and not obey the demands when I disagree. And then perhaps most difficult are the demands that I'm expected to respond to, and they're demands that I agree with. It's the way that I think I ought to be living my life. Let me illustrate. God said, don't lie one to another. It's not going to be that way in my kingdom. You don't lie. Now, that makes sense to me. I spent a lot of my time lying. Before I was a Christian, I lied. I told lies because it seemed like it was easier to tell a lie than it was to tell the truth. But as I got a little older, I began to understand that lying doesn't work very well because you can't remember all of the lies that you told, and you can't remember who you told which lie to. And so I eventually got to the point where I chose not to lie because it was just too hard to lie. So when God says, don't lie, I'm right there with him saying, yeah, don't lie. It's hard to remember that we're still responding to God's right to demand as the king, and we're not responding with our decision. But a lot of what God says is something that makes a lot of sense in this world. So we're going to be spending a little bit of time talking about how we think about those kinds of demands. The second thing that has to be a part of my focus is recognizing the extents and limitations of the kingdom and its benefits of citizenship that God decided would be a part of the kingdom. Now, here's the thing. Christians who are a part of the kingdom, who get to understand the benefits, who get to see those benefits work out in their own lives, who know how much this improves their lives, they really want other people to be able to enjoy the benefits that they enjoy. And that's as it should be. But because we've benefited so greatly from being a part of the kingdom, and because we want other people to be able to benefit, sometimes it's tempting to us to say that you can be a part of the kingdom when God didn't say that. We want other people to enjoy the benefits of kingdom citizenship so much that sometimes we expand the borders of the kingdom beyond what God has established. And we'll talk about that and a lot of the information that we see in what Jesus did when he was here. Now, the third thing that's important to my focus on the kingdom is to welcome all men into the kingdom, men and women into the kingdom, into which I was welcomed. Remember, God is not a respecter of persons. If God is not a respecter of persons, and he's established a kingdom, and it's going to be like this in the kingdom because that's what God decided, then I have to be careful to make sure that that's what I'm doing. And so we'll take a lot of the information that we see about Jew and Gentile relationships in the first century, and we'll try to bring that into the 21st century and how that would translate for us. What does that mean? We don't typically deal with Jew-Gentile distinctions in our country. We don't deal with it too much in 21st century America. We do deal with other kinds of discriminatory practices that we have to eliminate from our thinking. And so we'll be talking about those kinds of things. We'll talk about male and female relationships and how all men and women were accepted into the kingdom and there was no respect of persons with God, and how we have to work to make sure that that's the way it is in the kingdom as we focus on the kingdom. And one of the things that we've noted, the final thing that we noted about God and his mission in building a kingdom on the earth, is that God never established a kingdom that gave advantage to some and disadvantage to others. And so as we make that a part of our focus, we'll try to learn from all of the things that were said in the New Testament about master-slave relationships. And again, that master-slave relationship is not really a part of our 21st century America, but we do have other relationships that are kind of like that master-slave relationship. And so we need to learn from the master-slave relationship and bring that into 21st century America and talk about perhaps employee-employer relationships. So we'll try to do that. And then when I think about the advantages that belong to some and the disadvantages that we assign to others, I have to think about what that means in terms of people who have served God for a long time. And I know people who have served God, who have been faithful servants of His for their entire life. And it's tempting for me, again, this is just thinking from my perspective, it's tempting for me to think that those people deserve something in the kingdom that the latecomers don't deserve. The people that came to the kingdom late in their life, and they've not borne the brunt of the battle. They've not, as Jesus said in the parable, they've not borne the heat of the day. So we'll be talking about those. Remember that parable about the late coming workers that got paid the same amount as the people that had begun working in the kingdom early in the morning? And we'll talk about that. And again, how we can bring that into the 21st century and what that's going to mean for us as we think about our focus on the kingdom. All of that having been said, it seems appropriate to think about our relationship to the kingdom in this way as we close our discussion today. Most of the time we think about the kingdom as preparation for the future. I want to go to heaven, and that's why I serve God. And I began to put that into the context of actually making a decision to serve God. If I knew, let's just say, that I knew that I had 20 years to live on this earth, I wasn't going to die of an accident, I wasn't going to die of a heart attack, I wasn't going to die in a war, I knew that I had 20 years that I was going to be on the earth, and I would be able to choose when I would make myself a part of the kingdom. I've often asked myself, if I knew that I had 20 years, would I wait reasonably until year 19? To join the kingdom, to be a part of the kingdom? Or does it make more sense to say there's so many benefits in the kingdom and there are so many good things in the kingdom and it is so good for me to be able to worship God that I would want to spend all 20 years doing the kinds of things that make for the kingdom of God? Well, I guess you know how I'm going to answer that question. I wouldn't wait until year 19. I would join now. I would want to be a part of that kingdom now and be able to spend 20 years in that kingdom. I wouldn't want to give up a moment of that kingdom. And I was thinking about that yesterday as I was officiating at Nolan and Amelia's wedding. I know that Nolan wouldn't want to wait even one more day to enjoy the tremendous love that he has for Amelia. And he wanted to be married yesterday. I would never have told Nolan, well, you got time, you know, wait, give it another 20 years. And if it looks like it's going to work out, then yeah, get married. That would be That would be the height of folly. And I don't know anybody that would argue that that's the way that we ought to approach the tremendous benefits and blessings that we find in marriage. But I really do know people who have told me that if they knew they had 20 years to live on this earth, they would wait until year 19 to be a part of the kingdom. What a mistake. If you're not a part of the kingdom, if you want to be part of the kingdom, now let somebody know, because we want to talk to you about the kingdom and we want you to be a part of it as quickly as you can be a part of it, because we know there's so many good things in that kingdom.